Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I am Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive phone interview with top-ranking executive Rosaline Citron. Rosaline is Chief Executive Officer of White Hat Incorporated, an industry-leading information technology security provider. Rosaline, thank you for doing this interview and sharing your considerable expertise with our audience.
Oh, you're very welcome, Stephen. Thank you for inviting me.
What are your key guidelines for anticipating business risk and enhancing competitive advantage? How does credentialing help?
Basically, IT security is a community. And we've got a very, at White Hat, we've got a privileged trust relationship with some of the world's most security-conscious organizations and their IT security staff. In other words, we're basically very connected. We know what works and what doesn't work for these people. And we know what they've done, what they're doing, and what they're thinking of doing. And we've also witnessed the entire evolution of the Internet and IT security. As a matter of fact, I've been around since dinosaur mainframes ruled the world. Now, our IT security practitioners all carry numerous industry-specialized certifications and security clearances. If you are going to be respected and accepted in our world, by anybody, you have to have your certifications. It's a criticality for us. Because these people are so well certified, they understand what the products and services the clients will require and are very careful with the client's resources, budgets, and their own abilities in the implementation of products and services. Clients don't always have the resources, but they might have the money. The thing is, we need to be able to make sure it's done well for them. The strong corporations that we work with today are very cognizant of compliance issues and brand protection. And as the CEO of a company who understands the issues, I would want my security handled by people who really know what they're doing and know that they're trusted. After all, you're allowing us the ability to get close to the keys to your kingdom. Client data, patent information, intellectual property, personal data, and so much more. Especially at a time when industrial espionage is at an all-time high, it is amazing how many methods someone can use to get the data and trade secrets out of a company. We know that 70% of the attacks we see today are from the inside, not the outside. And we see a lot of companies out there, by the way, Stephen, that do security work as a sideline. To us, that's analogous to a plumber building your network. You know, you better know what you're doing when you're touching someone's security. And all of these factors lie at the heart of our decision-making and competitive advantage at White Hat. We work in IT security, it's all we do, and we really understand it.
How do you see the role of a chief security officer expanding beyond a sentry role, but also into a business role?
Well, we see the role changing dramatically. As a matter of fact, it's funny, the CSO or chief security officer, 5 years ago was a new designation, was a new title, really. And in the next 5 years, we're going to see that disappear. What we believe is happening, and we're seeing almost every day, is the CSO is now the CISO, or Chief Information Security Officer. They bound all business units within an organization, and they're responsible either to the board or to the corporate councils. So their roles have changed. Certainly the breadth of their jobs are changing, and we see it as security has to go hand in hand with the business operation. You can't be an island, which what a number of CSOs are these days. So we're seeing that change. They are becoming more responsible for the network itself. They're becoming responsible for the help desk. We've seen security change from, boy, you know, a firewall is such an amazing security tool. It's handled by the help desk today. Patch management 2 years ago was the kind of thing that a CSO would bring into the company and make sure they were patched up so they didn't have these terrible viruses. Today, it's handled by the help desk. These things evolve. You know, it's sort of like a specialist in the medical world. You know, you can go to a generalist or you can go to a specialist. But once something becomes a part of the world, like, say, cancer, for example, it's treated by a number of people. They have their specialists, just the same way as security, but they broaden the scope of what they're doing now. And it's very, very important that they do that. They have to become integrated into the business as a whole, not as an island just doing security.
I've heard you speak on corporate brand, compliance, privacy, digital identity, scandals, and disasters as segments of the business landscape. How do these areas influence how executives look at technology? How do we secure these areas?
Well, Stephen, you've touched on a key issue with us. Executives don't look at technology. They look at return on investment. So you install a chain link fence, barbed wire, and a guard post. What's the ROI on that? You know, when you think about it, there isn't one. But security doesn't have an ROI. It should be considered as part of the cost of doing business. Just the same way you buy an insurance policy. Why do corporations have insurance? To protect themselves, basically. You know, so you have to have it. It's part and parcel. And I think the issue there is, you know, how much risk is a corporation willing to take? As I said, it has to be part of the business. The issues that we deal with are that security tends to be event-driven, so classified as what we call tactical. Security needs to become part of the everyday process and should be treated as strategic from the get-go, not something tactical further down the road. And we're seeing a shift to compliance issues as well. Governance and privacy regulations are forcing companies to look at security, stronger policies, client privacy protection, brand protection, and moving them all into what we classify as a best practices area. And it's not unusual today to see a chief privacy officer or a CPO, whereas, you know, 2-3 years ago, those positions didn't even exist. You've got a chief privacy officer, you've got a chief compliance officer, and you've got a chief security officer. And actually, if you put them all together, I think you've got C-3PO, okay?
What is the association with mitigating business risk?
Okay, well, every corporation, every human accepts a certain risk to their lives every day, and every corporation has to accept some risk. The decision has to be made early on within the corporation as to how much risk a corporation is willing to take. So having best security practices and technology and savvy workforces will serve to reduce the risks that these companies face, and they will result in a better running and much more competitive organization. You know, we've seen polls done quite a bit lately, Stephen, where customers are asked, do you feel safe working with this company? Do you feel like your privacy is protected? And the interesting things that are coming out of these surveys are that the companies that they feel are protecting their privacy, that they know they haven't sold their name off anywhere, they're not coming up anywhere, are more likely to, A, continue doing business, but actually increase the amount of business that they're doing with these people. So that's a very good sign that compliance is actually driving more business and privacy. So, you know, when you look at things like that, when a corporation takes the time and care to protect clients' personal data and it becomes exposed, well, several things will happen. The clients will lose confidence in that company and they'll take their business elsewhere. And the corporate brand will take a negative hit. And we've seen that a number of times where large companies' stock prices have dropped upwards of 50%. Because of negative impact of a hack, a privacy breach. We've seen a number of these credit card clearinghouses who, you know, millions of credit card IDs lost, stolen, or otherwise. You know, some of them have gone out of business. Some have been sold as an asset package. Others are remediating and you know, making assurances that that won't happen again. So, you know, the thing is here, if you're a competitor to someone else and you see something like this happen to them, you're going to jump on that bandwagon and use it to your fullest extent. But if it happens to you, then you're foolish because you didn't take the lesson from what happened there.
Can you provide an overview of the processes required to reduce risk and enhance competitiveness?
Well, first of all, there has to be a will by the corporation and the board to improve right off the bat. And then the threat environment needs to be identified along with all of the attendant risks. The business assets need to be identified and their value has to be established. What's the value of your corporate brand? What's the value of your data? What's the value of your, you know, payables and receivables? Well, that's a hard cost. You can figure that out. But if the goodwill of your corporate name were to be ruined, what's that worth? So you have to make sure that you're protecting that. You know, a gap analysis will show up any deficiencies of the safeguards that are in place. And finally, the required safeguards have to be identified, they have to be budgeted, implemented, and monitored. And then you have to repeat the process because it's just another day.
Do you have best practices recommendations?
Yeah, actually we do. We've got a 5-step strategic plan that we work from. And the one thing that we all have to remember is when everything is a crisis or a panic, then nothing is. So you have to sort of sort things out and work from what is the most critical issue. So let's start with number one, as far as we're concerned. You have to start with a 20,000-foot view of the corporation. What are the priorities of the corporation? Having your own strong 5-year business plan is a great start. Well, no company doesn't have one that's publicly traded because you have to have it to keep your investors happy. So you have to use that and work with it. And that will help you understand where the company wants to go. And then around that, you can create your security strategic objectives. The second part would be run a risk assessment. Once you have your priorities in order, you look at which risks you face that could slow down or immediately stop the business in its tracks. You can achieve this with a strong security assessment, internal and external. Find out where your holes are and plug them. The third area that we work with practice is to set goals that can be measured. What do you need to protect? Generally, we recommend that you need to protect your people first, because they're really your biggest asset. Then your products, the things that you develop, or intellectual property. You have to protect your profits, or your shareholders aren't going to be too happy. And your processes are incredibly important. You have to protect those. Hard assets, and of course, your reputation. And they can be in any order depending on what the corporation's goals are, basically. And each industry is different and has its own specific risks. And those are just general ones, but they're guidelines that we give people. The fourth one is time frame. In strategic planning, long term, 3 to 5 years is the norm. With security, there's a big difference. The maximum you can have plans in place are usually a year to 18 months because the threats that are emerging change all the time, and they have to be taken into consideration as what we call unknowns. You have to plan for those. A super bug can come out and it hits your network and you think you've cleaned it up and it leaves 3 or 4 payloads behind that you didn't even know about. You have to be able to plan for those. And you also have to keep an eye on the regulation and compliance within any specific industry because they can rapidly change due to events. You know, ever since Enron, look at the changes in compliance. You know, look at the things that have changed in the last 5 years. It is unbelievable. So you have to have that unknown quantity out there. And I think the most important thing in the fifth step for us is being flexible. You can't plan for everything because there's no way you can imagine some of the stuff that comes out. And a very good example of that is Google hacking. Hackers are using the search engine today to do vulnerability analysis of your company. They're checking to see if they can break in. And they're using Google to do it. Or phishing. This is, you know, such a huge issue where people are getting these scam emails that look so official and they think that they need to send an email back. I mean, the latest ones were the CIA and FBI. They've got egg all over their face right now. They're so embarrassed. And they're still trying to shut that down. And that's been going, for 2.5 weeks now. Spyware. Probably one of the worst threats we're dealing with are the keystroke loggers that people are downloading daily onto their systems at home and at work without realizing what they're bringing down. Because there's no way you could have included that in your strategic security plan even a year ago, even 6 weeks ago. Some of this stuff is so new. And so even with all of that, the plans and tight security, sometimes something does happen. So what does the corporate internal and external communication strategy look like? This is absolutely critical to a corporation. We've all witnessed in the press issues with specific banks where corporate data was exposed or faxing problems or Canadian Tire money was coming out of ATMs, credit card information was exposed or stolen. So think about the easy way to tell if a company that has been involved in one of these has the right risk mitigation process and communications plans in place is the ones you remember as, boy, that was bad, they looked really bad, then they generally had poor communications and risk mitigation with media and the public. The companies that did an excellent job of communicating the issues, and even more important, communicated the remediation plans, are the companies that ultimately won that war. You probably remember the story, but can you actually remember the company that was involved? That's when they've done a very good job.
Where do you see your company positioned in the future?
Well, I don't think security is going away anytime soon. It is getting incorporated more and more into the company as a whole, but that was what we were hoping to see, that it would become part of the everyday process. So it's funny, some things do change, but some things stay the same. you know, the corporate strategic security plans. We try to take our own advice, which is quite a concept, as I'm sure you're aware. White Hat has to remain flexible. We have a core business philosophy and ethic that will continue to serve us well into the future. And we've been very diligent in staying ahead of the curve on threats and changes and laws. It's a lot of effort. There's a lot of research that goes into what we do. But it's part of our job, and it's what makes us the excellent partner for our clients. They can trust what we tell them. If we tell them something bad is coming, they're probably going to believe it, and they're going to, you know, make remediation to make sure things are taken care of. As far as changes, we know we're in a good position to proactively track the evolution of IT security and our clients' business models. Compliance and brand exposure probably are the two busiest areas for us right now. Security, compliance, and privacy. Software and hardware manufacturers are going through a high-speed consolidation. In the last 2 weeks, Stephen, three of our top-notch, what I would call best-of-breed suppliers, were bought by let's just call them industry leader suppliers, ones that just happen to have the market share. So, you know, we don't always recommend what the market leader is. We like the products that for our clients, along with our services, that will give them the best return for their money, but cause them to have the most safety in their environment. There's certain firewalls out there. Everybody in the world knows how to hack them. I don't want that in my environment, and I'm not going to let a bank put it in their environment. We recommend a firewall that most people have never heard of, but it's never in 10 years been hacked. That's what I'm going to recommend. That's the difference between us and a plumber, okay? So getting back to what we're doing, as I said, security and compliance and brand exposure are huge areas. Compliance and privacy software manufacturers are going through this consolidation. In a few years, we believe there'll probably only be 5 or 6 really big IT security manufacturers. We don't think there's going to be a lot out there. And because of the risks for new businesses, you know, risk mitigation and getting money as a company is hard for a startup. It's very, very difficult for companies out there. So, you know, unless they're heavily funded from the get-go, you're not going to see, and I think this is a problem we're going to see in our industry, you're not going to see the innovation in North America that you used to see. We're going to start seeing more of that coming out of places like China and India, things like that. One of the areas, I went off topic a bit, one of the areas that has served our company well and the practitioners we employ is the ability to create interoperability between third-party or commercial products, internal applications, and services. And that's something that we specialize in. So, you know, if we have a specialist here who knows a firewall, he doesn't know one, he'll know 7. You know, so he'll know all of them. He'll know which ones work, which ones don't work, and if somebody wants to make a change, how they can make that interoperate. Our recommendations to our clients are based on how technologies and policies and protocols interface within their environment. Over the years, you know, companies spent a lot of money on security tools, but they're still sitting on the shelf because they could never get them to work together. And that's what a lot of companies right now are working on, building these dashboards, as they call them, to, you know, connect your compliance tool to your firewall, to, you know, your intrusion detection package or whatever. They've been working at that now for 4 years. Well, that's got to tell you it's not an easy thing to do.
Well, that's interesting. I was just wondering if I can get some ideas of your, let's say, your top 5 predictions for the future and how we can best prepare for them.
Okay, well, it's funny, Stephen, I get asked this question a lot. Every year I'm asked to do my predictions for the year by a number of the newspapers out here in Toronto. So these are the ones that I just went through. I think it was with the Globe and Mail. So the number one, I think, is the superbugs that we're very concerned about. What people have seen have been the viruses and Trojans and worms, oh my, kind of thing. You know, they're coming at you. You got to fix them up. The superbugs are the ones that are going to come out. They're going to hit your network. You're not even going to know they're there because nothing's going to launch off them. It's not going to trigger anything. But then an event, a date, or some other issue is going to trigger the first, second, and third payloads, we call it, to come out. So it might be sitting in your network as a harmless email, you know, a greeting card or whatever that wasn't even an attachment. It opened as an HTML. And this thing is writing behind it. And at some point on a certain date, it launches and wipes out your hard drive, or it launches and puts itself out into the network. You know, it could be collecting data on, you know, passwords and IDs and whatever's going on there. And, you know, this is why we recommend so many different types of authentication to get into your systems, because these things are going to start collecting that data. So if you put them all together, you've got what we call zero-day superbugs. That means that as soon as a virus, bug, worm, or otherwise launches, it could either take off instantly and affect everybody within the first day, which is a zero-day attack, or it could sit out there dormant for 7 or 8 months, and then anything like, as a matter of fact, there was supposedly something going to launch today on the anniversary of John Lennon's death, and it was going to be called the Lennon bug. Now, we don't know if it happened or it didn't. We haven't seen it yet, but we were warned that it might come. Things like that. So we were watching for those things. So you have to be very, very careful of that. And they can affect millions and millions and millions of machines in less than a day. The concern we have is you remediate that, you patch for it, or you download whatever the antivirus manufacturers tell you to do, but you don't know what the payload is behind it. And it could just be harvesting data. Well, that's where the wealth is today. Basically, the GNP now of the United States is data. It's unbelievable. So, you affect that, you affect everything. What you need to do actually to remediate that is to prepare your antivirus products. And antivirus vendors need to be held responsible that no matter what they do, that they can remediate these issues for you. However, in the end, it doesn't matter. The corporations and the end users are responsible to update their software. Because even if the antivirus software companies push this data out to your server and you don't download it to the end users, then you are actually responsible. However, again, if the bug is powerful enough, then it could shut down entire networks in seconds, and you have to have your plans in place for disaster recovery, which actually brings up an interesting point. In the last week, we have done 9 disaster recovery plans on the security side for a number of very large corporations here, all of which who are planning for a pandemic. They're getting ready for it. They figure it's going to come anyway. When SARS hit Toronto a few years ago, it was the first human factor ever disaster plan that people had to put in place. Because generally a disaster is an earthquake, a flood, a fire. These have been the traditionals. But when this happened, it was human factor. People were affected so severely that we couldn't go out on site to see customers. They couldn't come see us. Work groups were created, like each of the large financial institutions had about 10 work groups. And they had people from every department working in each work group. So if one group got infected, the other 7 didn't. Well, now they're planning for this in a very big way, where everything from authentication, the strong authentication like tokens, etc., are ready to be deployed should one of these hit. And we were talking to one of these companies last week and said, well, what happens if the person shipping those tokens, the strong authentication tokens, is infected? Then what do you do? And they looked at us horrified, but it's something that you actually have to think about. So will they be using gloves? Can we, spray the individual tokens? Can we make sure that they're double wrapped and that they can be sprayed with an antibacterial before they're shot out the door? And nobody had even thought of that one because it hasn't happened yet. So therefore, how do you think of it? But it was something our chief security officer said, that would be one of my biggest concerns, that somebody who's handling the stuff that you need is infected. So, and then there's just a quick story of things that we've seen just recently. I think the second thing that we have to be very concerned about is identity theft. In June, I predicted that by the end of 2005, a minimum of 10% of the U.S. population would have its personal data exposed in one form or another, and putting all of those people at risk of identity theft. 3 days after I made that prediction, there were 40 million credit card names and addresses and basic data stolen and were exposed. So we didn't even make it to the end of the calendar year. So what we tell people to do is to prepare for the potential. It's amazing to me how many people that talk to me every day when I go and do a presentation on identity theft, that they've had their identity stolen. I've seen everything from, a few $100s to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's unbelievable what's going on. So what we tell people to do is to pay attention to the changes in their credit. There are a number of free services now where you can buy insurance that if somebody were to fraudulently use your identity, that you would be covered for that. If your identity is stolen and you are seriously at risk of monetary loss, you're more at risk of credit loss. And on top of that, in this country, in Canada, you are responsible to clear your name and pay those debts. So you know, having those credit cards where the fraud already covered, the fraud insurances on them, we recommend those very strongly. And just so people know, the average person who's had their identity stolen would need anywhere from 120 to 200 hours of phone calls and letters of personal time to make sure that their credit cards, you know, are cleared up. And our attitude is, it's your life, protect it. You know, make sure you do that. Moving on, the third thing that we're predicting, and because we're seeing so much of it right now, industrial espionage, it's at an all-time high. We're seeing incidents absolutely every week, in fact, more than one a week. Internal security has become a very high priority for corporations that we work with that have intellectual property to protect, and most of them do. You know, if you make ball bearings, it's probably not an issue. But if you're a pharmaceutical company or, you know, you manufacture high technology, I mean, look at all the lawsuits you're seeing on patents these days. Why do you think that happens? Because the data is getting out there. And people say, no, I had it first, you know, and it's just unbelievable. So corporations have to prepare and plan. They have to understand what is most invaluable to the company. They have to put software in place that will scan for keywords of this type of information to make sure it's not getting out via email. You have to spot check courier packages. It's not just done electronically. It's not all high tech, you know. We saw one company whose entire patent program for a particular pharmaceutical drug was being couriered out to Russia. You know, so when you think about that, it's really, really frightening. Instant messaging. It scares the hell out of all of us over here because of what we're seeing going out on it. And there's a lot of bugs now, by the way, picking up instant messages. There's a lot of viruses being built for that. Keep your corporate jewels in a very safe place with only trusted employees having access to that. And lately, you know, as I said, we've seen several incidents of industrial theft, and they were perpetrated by employees of 5 or more years tenure in those companies. So you've got to watch who you've got working for you. Phishing is number 4. Phishing and farming, as we call it. Simply put, it's identity theft of corporations. And here's where your brand protection that I keep jumping up and down about here comes in. Phishing is becoming so much more sophisticated, and it plays on the psychological fear of a human. You know, you have an account with, say, Citibank, I'm just using that as an example, and you receive a notice saying, we believe there has been inappropriate use of your account. The first thing that happens is you get that knot in your stomach, and you psychologically go, oh my God. You immediately, without thinking, respond, which is the natural human factor. That's what you're going to do, and that's what they count on you doing. You know, the ones that we're getting right now that are really ridiculous are the CIA and the FBI, you know, telling you that you've had illegal emails or you're looking at bad sites or sites you shouldn't be looking at. Well, first of all, the Internet is open, so nobody can tell you what to do and what not to do. But secondly, the CIA and FBI don't put things like that out there. We saw a really bad phishing incident about 6 months ago from the FBI, but it wasn't theirs, obviously. But it's very embarrassing to these law enforcement agencies. You know, they're out there trying to be the white hats, because that's what white hat really means, is a cyberspace good guy, and they're being lambasted by the fishers. So you've got to be very careful with that. So when you get an email that looks very real, and it has corporate logos and the correct electronic address, and it informs you that in some way, shape, or form that the corporation is experiencing some difficulty, and the most popular are they've experienced a security breach, because that scares people. They're undergoing a maintenance update, so you need to change your password and your ID. Oh, good. And your user ID or password has expired, therefore you have to redo those. Anytime anybody asks for something like that, you know, you're going to react to it. So we ask people to sit back, take a deep breath, call the institution or the bank or the organization that is asking you to do that, and ask, is it real? Is it legitimate? Because they'll know. We would hope they know, although I did hear a horror story last week where somebody was told, yep, that's us, that's for us for sure. Luckily, the client had asked the person's name and their position. They were a help desk. No, it wasn't theirs. It was a phishing scam, and the guy did get his stuff taken away. But they were able to bring, because he alerted them, somewhere up the line, I guess this person must have told someone in management, and they said, oh my God, no, that's not ours at all. You know, we didn't even know this was out there, so they were able to get it down. As a matter of fact, when phishing started, it would take, you know, upwards of a month to 6 weeks to track them down, track the website down, and get it shut down. Today, the average is a week, and that's only because they've got to track it down, and then they've just got to send a legal letter to the ISP or the whoever's holding the website, give them a legal letter saying, get this website down. This is not our website. It's illegal, you know. So we're seeing that. We've even seen some brought down in 24 hours, depending on who it is. Okay, so moving on here. To prepare for these kinds of phishing events, corporations need that communication strategy and key messaging to give to the public. Look, this is happening. We need you to fix this. You know, don't pay attention to it. We're fixing it. A remediation strategy, and you might even want to look into the new flavor of companies that are out there that specialize in brand protection. Their mission is to scour the internet for anything with your corporate name, address, logo, and review the content, and then verify it back with you to make sure this is your type of content. And we've seen this, you know, reducing the corporate exposure, as I said, anywhere from 6 weeks back down to probably 48 hours is the shortest time, or 24 hours, somewhere in around there. The fifth area, or the fifth concern or prediction we have, is cyber terrorism. Now, this morning I saw an article where the FBI said that they're not worried about an internet attack. But if you read the article, they're not worried today. My concern would be what happens in the future, because they're saying that, you know, they're looking at it from the terrorist point of view, you know, that there would be a cyber attack on, you know, the power grids and things like that. What our attitude about cyber terrorism is anything. Terrorism means anything that scares, anything that disrupts. So to us, an attack on the financial centers of the United States or Canada, yes, the power grids would be a concern. Anything in those areas, critical infrastructure, somebody attacking railway lines where they can move the rails, causing head-on collisions. We've seen it done. You know, it's a very, very concerning issue. Usually people like that are looking for a ransom of some kind, but it's only a matter of time. And we know today that the entire profile of a hacker, as I would have described it 3 to 4 years ago, somebody out there for fun and or for profit or just to get their name, because that was the big thing, look what I did, that's not it at all today. These people now work for organized crime. And that's the new profile. So how long will it be before extortion becomes a huge issue? We're already seeing that as a big thing, where companies who have online businesses are being attacked electronically, and the attacks will continue, so nobody can get online and buy their goods or their services until they pay the ransoms. And this is up, it's got to be up 600% this year. I can't believe what's going on out there. Yeah, so cyber terrorism is one of those things that we're very, very concerned about, and to prepare for it, you know, government and law enforcement are concerned. They're keeping an eye on what's going on out there, and they're watching how sophisticated the attacks are. But think about when all of these credit card companies or clearing houses were attacked. The issue that drives me crazy was, for example, Equifax. Had their procedure called for, did we check these people to make sure they're a real company or not? If they'd had that in their process and their procedure, they would never have been attacked. But nobody said, gee, are these a real company? It was a front. And they signed them up as a company and let them get to the data. So it's those types of things that we're very concerned about. So if that can happen, it's that simple, think about what can actually happen with very high-end technology and people who know how to use it.
You're continually selected as one of the top executives. How do you wish to shape the world?
I'd like to see it a safer place to live. I'm quite paranoid due to what I do for a living. I think basically because we've got a very strong corporate social conscience, we speak at a lot of events. We try to get the information out there. I'm very concerned about our younger people today based on the fact that, you know, when we were children, our parents said, don't cross at a red light, don't get in a car with a man with candy, you know, all those things. How do you tell a child that there are predators sitting on the other side of their screen? How can you convince them of that? And what's amazing to me is the fact that you see so many children today who can do more things on their computers than their parents sometimes don't even know how to download antivirus updates, but the kids can do it for them. So they are very savvy. You see what's going on. Some of them are very, very sharp, but we want to make sure that they learn what we call good internet hygiene, good computer hygiene. You know, practice safe hacks. It's one of the things that we purport out there. So how to change the world? I'd like to see the internet a safe place to be for everybody. I think it's a wonderful technology. I think it's wonderful that somebody at the age of 72 can go and get their master's in political science because they can do it online. How cool is that? But also you've got your predators out there. You've got your thieves. When was the last time you heard of an actual bank robbery? Because it's all done electronically now. People don't go in and stick up a bank with a gun. They do it electronically. No harm, no foul. It's done. So the world has changed, but we need to prepare the young people to take care of that change and to stay safe themselves. And we need to stay safe.
Rosaline, how about some fun questions?
Sure.
What's your passion?
Oh, obviously my work. I love what I do. It's very important that we do it. Boy, how can I put that? I flew out to the West Coast to speak last weekend, you know, just to educate people on compliance and protecting themselves, their own identities. Those types of things I do a lot of on my own time because I really love what I'm doing. My other passion would be my family and my two dogs, Neo and Morpheus. I think you can imagine where those names came from. So those are, you know, it's my work and my family are probably the two biggest passions of my life.
What's your favorite gadget?
You know what? I love international ATMs. It's a big gadget, but the fact that I can fly anywhere in the world, put in my card, and get out the currency that I need without having to run around trying to buy, you know, British pounds or French francs. I get them right where I am because not everybody takes credit cards in the world, you know, so it makes it much easier. I guess after that, obviously, my BlackBerry handheld with my technology gadget. And that's one of those things where the best thing about the BlackBerry is I get my email. The worst thing about the BlackBerry is I get my email. There's so much of it.
So how long have you had your BlackBerry?
I was one of the first people to get one because I'm on the road a lot and email is critical to us. It's what we need to do. So, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was one of the first people to get a Palm 7, which weren't even available in Canada. I got it down in the States because at the time you couldn't get Canadian email. There wasn't a cross-border program where you could get your Canadian email in say, California. So I was carrying two Palms around, one that was American and one that was Canadian. But now it's covered, thank God.
Rosaline, do you have any additional comments to make at all? Just off the top of your head.
Just off the top of my head. Keep an eye on what's going on out there. Business is changing. It has to comply. Keep your family safe on the Internet. Use it because it's a wonderful tool. It's great for people to learn by. But just play safe.
Well, those are good words of wisdom. Rosaline, it was a real pleasure talking with you today, and thank you for sharing your deep insights with our audience.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Stephen. Thank you so much. I always enjoy talking to you.